Hello, I'm Chris Wilson. I've been enthusiastic in mills since I was 10 years old. After the war, in 1945, my dad bought a car, went fishing, and I often went with him, and often to several places where I went, saw derelict mill towers, which I took great interest in. And the curiosity led to me wanting to know more about windmills. Fortunately, near where I lived in Hull, there was a windmill at Skibby still working. That belonged to JG&B Thompson's. And I got to know the miller there, and often used to go there in odd times to watch the mill working, talk to the miller. When I was 24, 25, I was looking for a windmill, and I bought one at Over in Cambridgeshire, which is in terrible state. It had been shut down since 1929, and it progressively deteriorated, the cap come off, although the main gear was still in place. It took me roughly 8 years on 8 shoestring budget to restore the mill and get the mill back to working order. While my ambition was to have a windmill, what not always do you think what's going to happen after your ambition is sort of accomplished? I met by then other like-minded people interested in windmills, and I got the chance of making sales not only for my own mill, but one or two other mills nearby. Namely at Upminster, I made 4 new sales, and West Bratting made 2 new sales, not to mention Swaffham Prior, which is very recent, and I made 2 new sales for that one. When I met people at Burwell, they wanted me to assist, and that's how I got involved in the Burwell restoration in the 1970s. The cap was in very poor condition, and the kerb was bad. That's what caused the cessation of milling at Burwell, the condition of the kerb. So the result was the cap had to be lifted off, underground, the tower demolished down about 2 or 3 feet, rebuilt with new masonry, and I laid the kerb back on, and to the cap frame, when it was on the floor, fitted what's called a new headstock, and the front mullions which support the breast, the pillar blocks which holds the neck bearing in place, plus the weather studs.
Okay, can we just pause there for a second? You talked about a kerb and the headstock.
Yeah.
I wonder, before we actually talk about the restoration, It would be quite good if you could maybe just describe the cap and what all the bits are. But what we have to try and do is not say that and point and things like that.
I'm with you.
So imagine I'm a blind person and we're standing here and you're describing what's above.
Right. Regarding the cap structure, from the floor where I'm standing now, which is known as a dust floor, if you look up, you'll see the main wind shaft coming in with the sails on the outside. Inside is a large wheel known as a brake wheel, of which the brake contracts. An iron band contracts on the brake to stop in the mill. That in turn drives the wallow wheel on the upright shaft that takes the drive down to the stones. Looking between the brake wheel and the sails overhead, there's a large beam going across with 2 mullions pointing towards the front of the mill. That main beam is known as a headstock. Now it's fastened in. It goes over the kerb, right across to the other side, and there's 2 other beams going back between the brake wheel spaces, and in the centre there's another great beam runs from side to side. On the up beam is known as a spratel beam. The upright shaft bearing is carried on the spratel beam for the drive, and then the spratel beam from there to the fantail are 2 other beams which are set in further than the outer ones which go from the headstock to the spratel. Those are known as the shear trees, and they can pass out through the back of the mill and support the fan stage where the fantail gears are. And the fan itself, it revolves through a set of reduction gearing to a pinion on top of the kerb. The kerb is a track on top of the tower, which is a mill six. And that there's a rack on there provided, and the pinion turns and it moves the cap into the eye of the wind. And every time the wind changes, so the cap will turn into it. Also, in addition to that cap frame, you see two links of channel iron bolted to the underside of the shears, passing from the headstock nearly to the tail of the mill. And that is to give reinforcement, because this particular design has inherent weakness, that the shears don't pass right through fore and aft as they normally do. And there was a tendency for the shears to sag down with the weight of the fan and the sails, and the weathers to try to do the same likewise, leaving less weight on the sprattle could actually rise and distort the frame. So that was done to remove any possibility of that happening.
Okay. Could you perhaps describe how this gear was made and how it interlinks with here?
The brake, looking at the brake wheel again, it's got two sets of arms, like the noughts and crosses frame, and the arms pass either side of the main shaft, and the square in the middle is left is allows for wedging the shaft, the wheel onto the shaft. That's known as a clasp arm wheel. Other types of wheel have been found with spokes passing to the centre of the shaft, known as compass arm, but they're more were obsolete in the 17th century. But that one or two compass arm wheels can still be found. The brake wheel also has wooden cogs mortised through the rim, which drive the wallower. Some later mills have iron teeth. Now, looking at the wallower wheel on top of the upright shaft, that is a single iron casting. Possibly, when the mill was built, it may have been a wooden wheel. The wallower on top is probably the highest stress wheel in the whole mill. From there, the drive goes down to the stones and everything else on the floor below.
Okay.
The mill itself, on this particular mill, you have roughly about three or four stories. The top one is the dust floor where you're standing. The object of the dust floor is really to stop dust and muck rising into the cap and dirt and grease and that dropping down into the mill. Below the dust floor you find the bin floor where the bins are for storage. And below that is a stone floor, millstones are housed, and the bottom is a meal floor. Some mills, which tall mills, might have two bin floors or three bin floors according to the style of mill. The average Lincolnshire mill has three, four, five or seven floors. Also on the dust floor you see the chain worked by the sock hoist, which for lifting corn up to the top of the mill. When I arrived at the mill, I was contacted about the condition of the mill. I arrived to have a look, inspect what wanted doing. The mill had been shut down then for about 10 or 15 years, and the cap had slowly deteriorated, water was getting in, and the kerb was in such a bad state that it had to be replaced, which was, the wind shaft was lifted out with a travelling crane and set aside, the cap roof was taken off, and the frame was lifted off, cap frame, and put down, stood on 40 gallon oil drums, and so it could be repaired on the ground. While the cap was off, the builders came in, removed the kerb, and took the tower down, because the tower was in appalling condition at the very time. It was built of clunge. And they took it down to about 3 or 4 feet and rebuilt the tower up again with mainly brick, clunge to start with, then bricks and some engineering bricks at the very top, on which the kerb was then replaced. Some of the curb segments were broken in half. But fortunately, they were successfully welded again. And the curb was, having been that side been repaired, the cap itself, the headstock which I'd mentioned previously, was had to be replaced. And with all the timbers in front of the brake wheel to the cells, the pillar block, the weather studs, and the supporting metal members.
Okay, would you mind just doing the first bit again?
After inspecting the mill, they found the curb, which had sunk. That, incidentally, is the iron track which is on top of the tower. And the mill sits on there and travels round when the wind blows. The curb itself had sunk, the masonry had rotted in places and had to be taken down to get and rebuilt so that a firm foundation could be found to put the curb back again. And after that, the curb was done. The cap, as it was lifted onto the ground, the cap frame, that was also repaired, replacing the headstock, which is between the brake wheel and the sails, and the connecting timbers to the head of the mill, which consists of the weather studs and the pillar block. The centre beam, the spratel beam, which takes the top of the upright shaft bearing, this spratel, that was found to be satisfactory, but the shears at the far end needed overlays what supports the fan stage.
Right, could we just pause a second? Because we seem to have got
a lot of wind.
Yeah.
It's all fixed.
A lot of back.
Looking into, also, when you look up into the cap, you see the main shaft which carries the sails. That is called the wind shaft. And the neck bearing behind the sails is carried on the weather studs, and pillar block. And the end of the shaft is on the tail beam. The beams between, directly in the middle is the spratel beam, taking the top of the upright shaft bearing, and between the spratel and the pillar block is a headstock beam that had to be replaced completely. That channel iron on the underside of the cap frame is to give it continuity and strength, because it's a weak point where the shear trees which carry the tail beam, and the spaces between the headstock and the spratel beam that could move upwards with the weight of the fantail trying to push down on the extremities of the shear trees out the cab, and the weight of the wind shaft and sails pushing down on the pillar block and weather studs. The channel irons were fitted so as to give strength to hold that in to a perfectly flat plane.
Okay, good.
Looking at the walls, about 3 feet below the curb, you'll find six recesses with a bolt and a nut on. And they're known as anchor bolts for holding the curb down onto the tower. And this, between those, at floor level, you'll find six more recesses with longer bolts in. And they're known as anchor bolts. And that stops the curb blowing off the tower with the cap. All curbs have some provision to hold them down solid.
Yep. Anything else we should be?
Regarding the bolts, anchor bolts, the six short ones are additional ones which are installed when I replace the curb.
Good. I'm interested. This is the brake here, is it?
Brake, yes. Iron brake.
Could you perhaps describe the operation of the iron brake and how it's used?
You'll notice round the brake wheel there's an iron band, which is a brake. That is a contracting brake, and that's anchored to the timber as you look at it from the front, backwards, on the right-hand side, and that encircles nearly the whole of the brake wheel. On the other end, the free end is then fixed to a beam that can be lifted and lowered. In doing so, that can tighten or release the brake.
So when would the brake be adjusted?
Well, when it's operated, the miller will pull the brake off. Because from the brake lever, there's a fastened to a rope that passes down through a hole in the cap to the bottom of the mill, outside. And by pulling that lever and pulling the rope, it raises the lever, and on the lever above is a pin and a swinging catch, and that can be pulled up so the cap engages with the catch and the brake is then off. And that can be felt, that movement, on the rope down below. And to stop the miller would give the rope a quick tug, holding onto the rope while it does so. Then it can lower the brake and so slow and stop the mill.
So,
brake catch is not visible from it.
So, is a brake just used to stop and start, or does it actually regulate the speed?
You don't know. You would never regulate the speed of the mill with a brake, because you get the thing on fire. It's just starting and stopping.
Right.
The speed is regulated by the shutters in the sails. They work like a Venetian blind.